This is the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Discover how to enhance your reputation as an attorney and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.
Hi, this is Richard Jacobs with the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast. And today I have a very unusual, interesting, and I think very helpful guest, Craig Turner. He helps people that want to run for local office, run a campaign to get them into local positions, you know, let's say assemblyman, councilman, perhaps even a judge, that type of thing. And I told Craig that, you know, my audience is primarily attorneys, and that I've seen many attorneys actually, you know, try to become judges. So I thought it'd be helpful to speak to them and bring it to you guys as a podcast. So welcome, Craig. How you doing?
Excellent. It's great to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
Yeah. So, you know, people tend to give their own introductions better than I can. So can you let folks know what you do and how long you've been doing it and et cetera?
Sure. For my day job, I'm a PR guy, and I've been doing it for a long time. I worked for the Chamber of Commerce for a long time here in Buffalo, New York. I have background in media. I have background in government. I've been a lobbyist. All the kind of pieces have come together to what I launched last year, which is called the Campaign Coach. Early on in my career, I worked for the Erie County Legislature here, and I worked for the majority. So I worked for 8 different legislators, and you know, did the government work. I was the press secretary, but separate of that, we team of us ran all the campaigns, and I did all the communications work. After a couple years of that, because it's a skill to be able to do that work and have the media relationships and everything, I started to get shopped out to other campaigns around town. So I worked on town races and judge races and school board races, and over time I ended up working on a lot of campaigns here in Western New York. So when I eventually left that role in government and I went to work for the Chamber of Commerce, I dabbled a little bit. I did some consulting on my own on the side with some town races around town. And what's interesting when you do local consulting for councilmen or town board or village trustees is, from a consultant's perspective, it's not really a great business because in many cases, the people running for these local offices, they don't have a war chest. They don't have a lot of money. So the alternative is you get hired by the town committee, the Republican committee or the Democratic committee, and you run a slate of offices of candidates, which means you're getting paid for one client, but you're taking on 6 clients, all of whom feel that they can email you or call you at any time of day to get some personal attention, which is fine. It's part of the business. And you know, in the end, it's these local candidates that need the most help. So because they don't have a staff, they don't have necessarily campaign managers, they don't have somebody doing communications and social media for them as someone running for state assembly, state senate, Congress would have that apparatus. When you're running to be a local public servant, you don't have that. I started to think at the time about, you know, how I could help people and still make it be a viable thing that I could afford to do it. And while I was working at the chamber still, I created this program. I called it Campaign in a Box, because when I created it, it actually was a box. I envisioned you would sign up for it. We would send you a box with a DVD and a workbook and all these pieces to it. Not a 101 level, you know, how do I run for office, but I'd say like a 301 level. So inside baseball, how do you read your community? How do you fundraise? Best practices for going door to door, those kind of things. Working at the Chamber of Commerce, I was working 75 hours a week and I had really no time to even look at it again. So it stayed in a drawer. Well, when I left the chamber, I opened my own company, my own PR firm, and have clients in that regard. But now all of a sudden, I had some time to look at this, and I pulled it out again, and met up with a mutual friend of ours, Seth Green, and had the opportunity to put some meat on the bones, and we, you know, together created the Campaign Coach, which is, you know, an extension of what I created a long time ago, only now technology makes it a lot easier to get this really valuable information in people's hands when they're running for office for the first time.
Yeah, interesting. I guess some insights I've had, not knowing anything about this, is that, you know, the recent presidential election obviously gobbles up all of people's attention, but, you know, they drive around town. I'm in Austin, Texas. I see signs for local people. You know, I don't know who these people are. I don't know much about them. I think to myself, how did these people get elected? Like, you know, I see signs with their names, but who votes for these people? Does anyone vote for them? And how do you run for a local office, assemblyman or councilman? Or so maybe you can give some insight on that. Like, what is it actually like? Do people run unopposed? Are there heated battles? Like, what? You know, who votes for these people?
Sure, and you know what? You're not alone in that. In fact, one of the driving factors for what I'm trying to accomplish here is in 2015 across the country, which is essentially the last local election. Now, there are local elections every year. You know, there's a lot of city elections last year running with the president, the presidential campaign. But the odd number of years are the local election years. In 2015, it was the lowest voter turnout across the country in 70 years. 70 years. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One is millennials. Millennials are not coming out and registering to vote. That's a big piece of it, and they are a large population right now as they come to voting age. Second is the temperament of elections. People are tired of it. People are tired of the name-calling and the mudslinging and all the things that the negativity that goes into the elections. And, you know, and if you look at the 2016, the presidential election, you might disagree with what I just said, because it did change the focus of the election and it was awful. A lot of the rhetoric that was going back and forth. But when you get down to the local level and you're running for town board, town councilman, or village trustee, everybody knows everyone. And to think that what happened in the presidential election last year is going to be effective this year in the local elections, it's not. It's not. People are turned off by it. In fact, I expect voter turnout this year to be as low as 2 years ago, if not lower. People are burned out, and you can see, as you move away from last election day, that we've been through the inauguration. We have, we are now into the actual presidency. In many regards, the election hasn't ended. I mean, it may have ended officially, but the rhetoric surrounding it is still going on every day, and people are going to get more and more turned off by that. So as you talk about who's running for office and why and how do people know who they are and how they get elected, that's what I created this program for. I look at, you know, the lowest voter turnout in 70 years. That means people are turned off to elections. They think their vote doesn't matter. And in many cases, they feel there's not a good class of candidates out there for them to support. That third one, that's what I'm going after. How can we create good candidates that understand policy, that understand that they're running to be a representative of the public, and who, once elected, are going to be good public servants in office?
Well, it also seems like local candidates, you know, I don't even know what they do, and I don't know if most people know what they do. And so it seems like a candidate just becomes an issue, you know, Prop 102, and that's as long as candidate A votes for it and B is against it. It almost doesn't matter who the person is. It's just they're just about this one, maybe public proposition, and that it seems like that's how they get votes.
One of the key pieces of the Campaign Coach program, and you know, I have an array of tools for local candidates to use. Everything from a how-to guide to running for office to take you start to finish, all the way through, templates for letters and press releases and mail pieces and everything that they would need on the hands-on piece of running a campaign. But one of the key components is I run a podcast. It's called the Campaign Coach Podcast. And on that podcast, I interview elected officials, or people that are retired elected officials, but people that have been local candidates and have won an election. And the insights I pull from these podcasts, these interviews are absolutely phenomenal. And the reason I say it's a key to the program is because I'm a consultant. there's lots of consultants out there that you could turn to if you need anything. Now, I've decided to make, you know, what I do a little more public for people to have access to. But now I've got my, you know, 20 years of experience in running political campaigns. Now I've got podcast interviews of people who have been there and done that. People who have knocked on doors, people that have called people and asked for money when they didn't feel like doing it, people who have stood at the podium on election night and thanked their supporters for a hard-fought victory. The insights that I pull from them are just tremendously add to everything that we're trying to accomplish. Now, the reason I say all that is because one of the questions I ask on the podcast is, what surprised you most when you got out there on the campaign trail? And a number of them have said exactly what you just said, is that people don't know the issues. People don't know necessarily who they're voting for. This is voters in general across the board. Something happens on your street, in your neighborhood, something needs to get taken care of, and who do you call? Well, they might start with the council person. A lot of them will go right to Congress. You know, they'll call the congressional office about something happening on their street. And many times, they are not the appropriate person to be calling. And so when you're running for office as a local candidate, one of the main things that you need to do when you start going out door to door is to actually educate people on the office that you're running for. Are you running for councilman? Then there are certain things you can affect. You're going to go to somebody's door and say, I'm running for member of the town council, and they're going to start going into federal trade policy or Obamacare, and you have to be able to come off of that topic and say, well, no, here's what we can talk about. I'm actually here running because, our park is filthy and we need to get it cleaned up and make sure the town's on top of it. Because people don't know. The education process for that is a pretty important part of running a local campaign.
Interesting. So, I mean, it's 2017, but you're talking about people going door to door. Is it, I would think most people want to just rely on social media and not have to go anywhere and talk to anybody. And maybe even the voters are like that. I don't know. So because these positions are local, what have you seen are the best strategies that actually work to get votes?
Well, door-to-door is an absolute key to a local campaign. And as best as you can do it, that doesn't end if you go to higher office. You know, if you're in a town with 5,000 people, there's no other way to get to those people than door-to-door, or no better way, at least. When you get to a larger running for state assembly or something where you've got 100, 120,000 people in your district, you can't go door-to-door to the whole district, but it is important to get out into key neighborhoods and knock on doors. There's two pieces to that. One is the direct contact with voters. I'm sure that if you're on any voting mailing lists come end of October, your mailbox is inundated with mail pieces. That doesn't mean you should ignore a direct mail program, but it's a lot of noise. The best contact you could possibly have with a voter is by knocking on their door and sitting and listening to them for a couple minutes on what's going to be most important to them. As I talk to the candidates, the people that are, you know, they've offered their time and their expertise on the podcast, every single one without fail, that is the most important thing you can do is get to voters. And one, it's the personal contact is critical, because in these local elections, we have on our website, we've got some examples of races that were won or lost by less than 10 votes. So how many are, you don't want to be that candidate on election night standing there losing by 7 votes when there were at least 7. It would have been very easy for you to go knock on 7 more doors. The second piece of it in a local election, though, is hearing what they have to say, because you can go into this thinking you know everything about your community and have your agenda. And it's important for you to get to people and tell them your agenda. But they have things to say, too. And what I always try and I mentioned it before, but I always emphasize for candidates is you're running to be a representative of the people, not a representative of yourself, a representative of the people. So when you go door to door, you're going to learn an awful lot about what's going on in your community and the way people feel about it. You know, when you are running for Congress or state Senate, you can run telephone polls and really get a flavor of what's going on in your community as you create your agenda and your talking points. When you're running for town board, you don't have $3,500, $4,000 to plunk into a into a telephone pole. And if you did, I would tell you not to do it and put it into direct mail. That being said, you walk a couple neighborhoods, you're gonna understand what's going on in your community pretty quickly. You talk about social media. Social media is a tough animal in local politics because it's not easy to target your message. You can target pretty well, but in the end, you don't necessarily know who's seeing that post pop up on Facebook or on Twitter. Whereas a direct mail piece, you know who's getting that. You know who's getting that specific message that you want to put it in their hand. Going door to door, you know ahead of time exactly whose house you're walking to, how you know whether their reliability as a voter, and maybe even you know issues that they've that are important to them based on their neighborhood or based on you know other factors you have data on. So it's you know. Social media, yes, you hit the nail on the head. It a lot of candidates would think that sitting and doing a social media campaign is going to do the trick. But every single winning candidate you talk about, they're going to tell you getting out of your house, going door to door, going through four or five pairs of shoes, and then when you're not going door to door, you're going to picnics and you're going to farmers markets and you're going to church bazaars, and that's the best way to get to the people that you need to get to.
And of the people you get to, just because you go to their door doesn't mean that they're the type of person that'll get out and vote. So, I mean, is there a particular kind of person that votes? Is it just like old people that have nothing better to do or passionate people? And how do you identify people that will actually take action?
Sure. There's a couple different ways to do that. And you know, think about it as a return on investment for your time. You don't have all the time in the world. You know, depending on when you announce, you probably have 6 months. We call it a 6-month job interview with your community. So you've got 6 months to get to as many people as you can, understanding all the other things that you have to do. And a lot of times when you're running for local office, you have a full-time job too. So the amount of time that you can spend getting to voters, you have to maximize your return on investment for that time. So what you do is you look at the most likely voters to come out and vote for you. So obviously, if you're in a partisan election, you look at your party. Who's going to be your base based on your philosophies and principles? If you're in a nonpartisan election, you have to do a little more homework. So you have to look at who's going to be aligned with you on issues that you support. Then you look at the voter records, and I mentioned about the 70% turnout, 70% less turnout in 2015. So if I'm going out in 2017 to look for probable voters, people that voted in 2015 are good voters. They are the best of the best voters, and you have to know that. You have to look at the local elections and see who voted in the local elections. Going into 2017, you don't necessarily want to take a peek at them, but you're not going to base your strategy on who voted in the presidential election because 10 times as many people vote in the presidential election. But if you can nail down the voters who voted in 2015, they're the best of the best voters. So that's kind of how you approach it. You're going for what we call prime voters, and then and then you align your party, then you align your issues, or, you know, if you belong to the fire department, then hit the people in the fire department. If you belong to the football league, then you hit the people in your football league. What you're doing is trying to find your base, find the people that are you can most reliably count on coming out to vote for you on election day.
That should make sense. Maybe a quick tweak of an example, because the audience is mostly lawyers. If they want to run for a judge, have you had any experience in helping people run for that position? And is that position different? How is it different than other ones?
Sure. I have had some experience with judge campaigns, judicial campaigns. They're an interesting animal because you can't necessarily vote, or you can't run on policy and topics. Whereas if I'm running for a legislative seat, if I'm running for town board or even all the way up to Congress, here are my five platforms. Here's the position. You know, if you elect me, this is what I'm going to vote for once I get into office. As a judge, running for judge, you can't do that because you can't be biased even before you run your campaign and then get the position. So it becomes a lot even more of what I just described, the grassroots. because running for a judicial position is very much name recognition and getting the word out of your qualifications. It's more about qualifications than stances and positions. So you're running for a judge. That's right. Yeah, we always laugh at my colleagues and I in this business. We always laugh because you go to a fundraising event and the judicial candidates have these giant placard name tags on that you can see from all the way across the room. And it makes sense because you need a billboard. It's about name recognition and qualification. So as they walk around the event, they need as many people to see that name tag as possible. But in the end, the campaign is the same. Hit as many doors as you can as possible. Get to your base and make sure you get them out to vote. There's a phrase that we use in local campaigns and any campaigns. It's called GOTV, get out the vote. And when I look at that, when I talk to people about that, it's a key component of your campaign that you put 6 months of time in it. That last 48 hours is your get out the vote time. And if you don't have a get out the vote program, all that 6 months ahead of you is going to be wasted. But I like to take it one step further and say, get out your vote. As just to your point, you said you go to the door and talk to somebody, it doesn't mean they're going to come out and vote for you. Well, you need to identify your voters early in the campaign. And when it comes to the night, the day before election day, and you're calling people to remind them to vote, you got to have a good list of people that said they were going to vote for you. You got to call them and say, okay, I appreciate your support. Now, tomorrow morning, I need you to get out to the poll and actually fill in the circle or pull the lever or whatever apparatus you have in your community.
And I know it widely ranges based on election, but and you said sometimes 10 votes can make the difference. But how many votes in aggregate are people getting for local positions? Like, is it surprisingly low, high? Is it all over the place?
It's all of it. Well, first of all, it depends on the size of your community, whether you're running for a village, a town, a county, a judicial race. It's gonna be different. Percentages were low. They usually look at percentages. I mean, they were less than in 2015, they were less than 25%. And that's not even of the population. That's of eligible voters. So, which is where counting the votes becomes very specific. Knowing, we always advise to the candidates, man, if you can identify and pinpoint that somebody's going to come out and vote for you, you do everything you can to get that to get that vote done. We had a race here locally 2 years ago, very contested. It was a town supervisor race, and on election night, there was a one vote difference between the two candidates. Now they counted the absentee ballots, and I think it was like four after that, and then I think the final after they did affidavits was 14. So you lose an election by 5, 10, 14 votes, and then the people come out of the woodwork. Oh, I was going to vote for you, but I didn't have time. Well, guaranteed you can find 14 of those people. So at the local level, just counting those votes and making sure that you're following up with anyone who has given you notice that they intend to vote for you. It's very similar. I mean, take it, my other role in PR and marketing is how many touches do you have to get on someone to make a sale? You have to think about that when you're a candidate. How many times can I make contact with this person before I can, I'm assured that they're going to go out to vote. The other thing is, We ran another campaign locally here in 2015 that we looked at. We did what we were supposed to do. We looked at 2013, and it was a town of about 60,000 people. And we looked at the 2013 numbers and saw about 21,000 people voted the 2 years before in the last local election. So we looked at that and said, okay, well, we need 11,000 votes to win. So that was our number that we looked at the beginning, and we counted the numbers and everything. Election night came, and about 12,000 people total voted in the election. And we're like, I mean, to show how much it diminished in 2 years because of the, people's aversion to the nasty rhetoric that's out there. Not that we did that in the campaign, but it's just, this is the way people feel about elections right now, and it's unfortunate. But, hopefully we're trying to get to as many people as possible, and you know, teach them how to. Here's how you be a good candidate, and here's how you reach the voters with your message. And then once you're elected, here's how you serve your community in an effective way.
Gotcha. All right, and then you know, there's a lot of great insights. But to wrap up, for people interested in running for judge or running for some kind of local position, you said you have a course or you're a consultant. What do you have to offer, and how can they get at it?
So we've got a lot of different tools on www.thecampaigncoach.com is my website, and we start with a couple of different things because we realize there's two tracks. One, I created a pros and cons questionnaire because there's a lot of people, and we look at this at the beginning of the year. People are trying to think about what they're going to do in the next year, and I figured this would be a good step for people. It's a questionnaire with about 20 questions that I've compiled over 20 years. That basically, once you go through these questions, you have an idea as to whether you're ready to run for office in the first place. You know, questions are because a lot of people, everybody has a purpose for running. Is it to go to a higher level of office? Is it to get something done in their community? Is it because they are so angry about what's going on in their community? There's many, many reasons, and we encourage you to find that reason and understand it before you make the leap to run. But in doing that, thinking about the role itself, you tend to overlook the different repercussions on your life. How will it affect your job? How will it affect your family? How would it affect your reputation in the community? What do you know about policy? What's your starting point? How about fundraising? Do you have 10 people you can call to get your campaign kicked off? A lot of questions like that we know that people aren't thinking of, so we call it kind of a reality check on this. And if you can make it through those questions, and I didn't do a survey or anything, they're introspective questions, that if you can answer these questions and you still feel positive about what you're doing, then move forward. Beyond that, we have a whole bunch of tools to use. We have, I went through and I pulled every state how to run for office and filing instructions and everything. So that resource is on the website. And then we have the actual tools. So I started out with there's an ebook, and it's free on the website for anybody that just wants to get a first glimpse at running a campaign. And it's called The 7 Mistakes That Candidates Make. And what we did was kind of look at some things that I know from my experience that candidates go into an election thinking, and by the end of the election, they feel differently about just having experienced it. So we put that into an ebook for people, and it's a very nice starting point. Beyond there, we have what we call the blueprint, which is the how-to guide. This one I described before as the 301 level, really insights into, what you're going to get into once you're running and how to carry yourself through election day and beyond election day, because that's really the goal here. I want to see people be effective leaders and really get something done in their community. And then the last tool is what I, do hands-on when I'm working at a campaign is we call it the done for you program. It's templates, it's letters, it's fundraiser invites, it's mail pieces, it's speech templates, it's really everything that a candidate needs in a plug and play format. I have everything ready. You just plug your own issues and your name and your logo into it. Yeah. And you're ready to go out to the public with it. So a lot of resources that come in a couple different forms. And then of course there's the podcast. And again, maybe I'm biased because I get the opportunity to meet these people and hear their stories. But I just think their stories are fantastic. And if you're thinking of running for office and you really want insights, you just load up iTunes on your phone, and while you're driving, just listen to what these people have to say, because they've been there and they've won an election, and the fact that they've are willing to get on air and tell their stories is pretty moving to me.
Well, great. Well, Craig, what's the name of the podcast?
It's the Campaign Coach Podcast.
Okay, that's great. Well, Craig, thanks so much for your insight. That's all the time we have. I really appreciate you coming on, and anyone, again, that's listening that is considering running for local office, I definitely urge them to take you up on your resources, because they'll be in a lot better shape to do so than they just you know, go with their gut and try it. So thanks so much.
Yep. Absolutely. Thank you, Rich. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Call 888-225-8594 or email rj@speakeasymarketinginc.com to enhance your reputation and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.